For those who don't know me, my name is Wayne Brazel from AMP. So thanks everyone for joining us this afternoon. This session is around complexity theory. A couple of housekeeping things before we start. First of all, can I remind everyone to fill out the feedback forms either online or on paper, and they can be handed in the paper versions at the registration desk. Please speak clearly into the mic as it will be being recorded. We welcome questions and particularly look to have some good debate at the end. Our presenter for today is Josh Corrigan. Joshua is a principal at Milliman. He specialises in providing risk advisory services as well as implemented and outsourced risk management solutions to a wide variety of insurance and financial institutions. These span an array of related fields, including market risk management, risk and capital frameworks, and enterprise risk management. He is the senior leader responsible for supporting the risk management within the global team and hedging of over $500 billion US of assets. He has global experience in this field and has recently spent 8 years in the UK. In addition to this, Joshua is a member of the Risk Management Practice Committee, a fellow of the UK profession, as well as a CFA chart holder. So please welcome Josh.
Thanks, everyone. So today I'm going to be talking about complexity science. So I encourage you to open your minds to this emerging field and its potential applications for actuarial and ERM work. I'll give you a brief overview of kind of what complexity science is before delving into three individual specific examples, one on strategic risk, one on op risk, and one on an emerging risk process. The thing that I find very, very powerful about these techniques is that they're naturally quite different to traditional actuarial techniques, and they're very good at approaching problems that traditional actuarial techniques are typically very bad at doing. So I hope that the three case study examples in particular give you a little bit of insight. I'll really only be kind of scratching the surface. This is a massive topic and area, and there's many additional information papers that are out there that you can look at. So I don't intend to go through this, but this is a fabulous overview, I think, of complexity science, the complexity science history and landscape all in one. It's taken from the Wikipedia website page. And what I think's great about it is it basically kind of draws together a whole bunch of emerging fields that have really been around for quite a while now, probably since the 50s and 60s, so the better part of half a century. And complexity science, I guess technically you could say it's kind of this branch coming out here, but it's very interrelated to a lot of other science fields, many of which I grew up kind of being fascinated about chaos theory and Mandelbrot sets and AI and so forth. So it's actually great that now the field is at a level and stage where it's made huge advances, obviously outside of the financial space, has developed tools, approaches, techniques to solve some of the most difficult problems in some of the scientific fields. And I think there's huge amounts of potential application to the field of finance. So I'm hoping to take you through that today. Specifically, when we talk about actuarial studies, over the last 2 years, there's been two, I think, foundational papers. The first being the one on the right. On complexity science that was put out by the Society of Actuaries in the US in 2010. It's a behemoth of a paper. It's over 220 pages long. It's a great read, and it basically covers four major areas. So networks, cellular automata, artificial societies and serious games. Each of those in their own right is a huge area. I'm not going to be talking about that specifically today, but I would encourage you to read that paper. The other paper is one that was put out by the actuarial profession in the UK. In 2010, they put out a submission, a call for research to the industry, and we were lucky enough to be selected to basically put together a paper on the use of complexity science for ERM. Actually, the call for papers was a little bit broader than that. It was all about how can we attack emerging risk and strategic risks in a different way. And we partnered up with one of the professors from the University of Bath and Bristol to do this. And so what we came up with was a paper. I wasn't involved in the paper, but one of my colleagues, Neil, was, who was out here at the ERM seminar last year and presented some of these concepts. So the paper itself, upon which this talk is loosely based, covers these three main fields. So concept mapping, Bayesian networks and phylogenetics. Each of these, I think, have very, very useful, insightful and direct applications to risk management work. So before I delve into some of that detail, just backing up for a second, if we just take systems thinking or complexity science as a noun, what do we actually mean by that? And I think it's two things, really. It's basically, first and foremost, a philosophy or a worldview that basically says, unlike traditional scientific techniques that have been around and applied really successfully over the last 100 to 200 years, which is all about reductionism, let's drill into the detail, let's get as deep as we can on something, let's take the opposite approach and let's think of holism. Let's look at how different fields combine, look at the interactivity between two things, and basically, we're looking at the system as a whole, and we're looking at the behaviours of a system as a whole, as opposed to one particular aspect of that system. And then, essentially, what you get is the emergent behaviour from that system are things that we're really interested in. And the behaviour in particular is something that is not characteristic of any one of its parts. So that's the broad-based philosophy. But then, when we come about taking that philosophy and implementing it in practice, then you can also say that the application of complexity science or systems thinking is a process. It's a process or methodology that basically helps us understand that system, to see both the detail and the full picture at the same time. In particular, we can use some of these techniques to address some of the difficult problems in the risk analytics space. Some of those problems we've been struggling with for quite a number of years now. This is a great analogy, I think, to, in particular, the risk management field, not just for insurance, but more holistically across many industries. You can kind of think of a risk framework in terms of an iceberg, where you only see 10% of it. And most companies manage risks at this level, at the crisis level. Essentially, once an event or something has happened, risk management typically kicks in there, and we see that in a number of industries, particularly in the resources sector, where you get huge failures and catastrophes happening. Really, what we're dealing with here are symptoms. Better risk management frameworks will typically deal with events. So you might have risk registers, for instance, and many companies have those, and a lot of risk frameworks are framed on what we see above the surface, the crisis and events, the equivalents to symptoms and causes. But what systems science is trying to do is drill below the surface, and we're saying, what are the underlying patterns that a system is characterised by that drives the events in the first place? And then even further, what is the underlying system structure that gives rise to those patterns? So we're trying to drill right down to this level so that we understand the system structure, and you can't really understand this and this until you've understood what type of system you're dealing with and what types of patterns or behaviours that system is going to be characterised by. And so you can think of a system as almost anything. You can think of your own body as a system. It's a complex adaptive system. It's made up of a number of subsystems, a number of individual components. They all interact, and they give rise to emergent behaviour, which is holistic behaviour, is how we walk and think and so forth. And a company is the same thing. A company is a complex adaptive system. It has these properties. It has a purpose. It has objectives. Emergence. So outcomes of the company emerge over time due to the properties of the company as a whole, as opposed to any particular division or person within that company. It has self-organisation, so it has structure and hierarchy, but very few specific leverage points. You can't get a hold of a company and say, this is it. It's not one process or one activity or one person. It has interactive feedback loops, so it typically exhibits non-linear behaviour. Unintended consequences are something that many companies suffer from. And it has tipping points and critical levels of complexity prior to which everything is fine, but beyond which everything collapses. And, you know, a lot of companies suffer from those tipping points over the financial crisis a few years ago. Evolution and history is important, and one of the most difficult things that we all have problems with is causes and symptoms essentially are separated temporally and spatially. So that becomes very difficult to say this event was actually caused by some decisions that were made many, many years ago that gave rise to a system structure in a certain way. And essentially, when we think of... when we use systems thinking specifically for risk applications, you basically end up with the definition of risk is the unintended emergent property of the structure of a company, essentially. So it's a very different starting point to a traditional view of risk management. So now what I hope to do is just drill into a couple of examples relatively quickly, just to give you a flavour for some of the applications. Again, those two papers, in particular the UK one, goes into a lot more depth than these case study examples. So cognitive mapping or concept mapping is a very, very useful technique that we're essentially trying to elicit directly the structure of a company or whatever it happens to be, whatever system you're analysing. And you can think that in your own head, you have an understanding, you have your own concept map of how your business or your division or your area or the entire company, how it behaves, what its drivers are, how they're interrelated. But I can guarantee that that's going to be different to a different person in the company, whether they're at the same level or a higher or lower level. And so what we're trying to do in using concept mapping is trying to link basically things like strategic outcomes, strategic objectives, through to the underlying business drivers and the influences of uncertainty that impact on those drivers. So essentially trying to map out the dynamics of the company directly. And what we're really interested in doing is identifying these key nodes in orange. Now, those key nodes in orange are essentially concepts that are highly linked. They're highly central to the story or the dynamics of the company. And they're critical nodes. So they're nodes, they're concepts that are absolutely fundamental to the story that we want to know about, because they're going to be key points of leverage when it comes to understanding risk in a business. We also want to understand key drivers like this green concept here. So there might be many concepts in here, but some concepts like this one up the top only has a direct influence on one particular main objective. But there might be a node down here or a concept down here that basically, if it changes in a certain state in either a positive or negative way, the impact of that kind of filters through multiple points of the system, the company, to influence the key drivers and ultimately the business objectives of the company. So you want to know what these are, and you want to separate them from ones that are less important. And we also want to identify gaps. So where a concept is just a concept that either doesn't appear to have any interrelationship or isn't highly connected in any way, like perhaps this one, it's indicative of perhaps a driver that is poorly understood in a company, and that can be a source of risk in itself. So we want to be able to identify these things. And the beautiful thing about it is that there's now a range of tools that are relatively affordable and easily understood that enables us to do this very objectively and very systematically. So we put together a case study on a variable annuity block of business, And this is just an example of how we would go about constructing one of these concept maps. So we'd start out with some objectives. We kind of push down to the next layer of understanding what the business drivers are. So profitability is driven by capital efficiency and margins, etc. And all the way down, we kind of continue that story down the chain until we're satisfied we've captured the main dynamics of the business. So that's kind of the next level of detail. So here there's 76 drivers and 140 relationships. What we're dealing with is a complex business. It's a complex system. And that's great because we can analyse it. We can analyse it as a network. And so we can ask some really important questions like, what are the key drivers? Well, we can very easily analytically assess or identify what those key drivers are because we can count out, you know, the number of how connected some of these concepts are to the overall system. And so in this illustrative case study, the cost of operational risk, product design and features, the hedge program, hedge strategy, cost of capital, all these concepts are central to that story. So what that's basically saying is that if something happens to those concepts in the business, it's going to have a very material effect upon the outcomes of the business, as opposed to ones which are, you know, not even on this chart, but right down the bottom where they're poorly connected. We want to know about these. And then we also want to know about what the most potent drivers are, which are the drivers that influence those key nodes the most. And so what you can then do is you then remove everything that's superfluous to that, and those key critical concepts and potent drivers, they're almost like the core skeletal framework of the company that you really want to get a handle on, that basically tells the core story of the company from a strategic driver perspective and essentially a risk perspective as well. It also facilitates identifying different risks like feedback loops that typically we're very bad at doing because they're difficult to identify in the first case. So this is just one of, I think there was 13 feedback loops on that graph, and feedback loops are where companies can very much get into trouble, particularly where those elements of the feedback loop exist in multiple silos of the company, so no one silo of a company can actually see the feedback loop. It's not until you collect all of it holistically that you're going to see it. I'll move on now to op risk. Op risk is an area that the industry has, I think, struggled with for a number of years. And typical approaches, certainly that the banks take and I think a number of insurance companies take, are wanting on a number of perspectives. They're typically frequency and severity type of approaches. You know, you're trying to identify frequency of events and the severity of that event, combine those two distributions, and it gives you an outcome. The problem with that approach is that they're very, very difficult ways that it's very difficult to calibrate those loss distributions, essentially, particularly when you've got low frequency, high severity type of events, because you don't have data. Or where you do have data, it's not that appropriate. So what we're seeing now is the latest wave of op risk models starting to use Bayesian techniques and Bayesian network techniques, which are basically built directly off the business drivers themselves. And so for those of you who aren't familiar with Bayes' theorem, I'm not going to go through the detail, but essentially Bayes' theorem is all about saying, I want to understand the state of some variable, the probability of it, and I have an unconditioned expectation of what the probability is. And then what I want to do, I want to collect evidence. I want to see what the evidence that I think is going to influence that probability outcome. So I have a prior probability and a posterior probability, and I have some evidence that influences that. So what we then do is, in the same way as the concept mapping, we need to draw out what those key business drivers are, and we need to connect them up in a way that is representative of their relationships to one another. And so this is a simple example looking at op risk broken down into model errors, IT and infrastructure failures, back office, trading, fraud, etc. And all of those things are dependent largely upon quality of people, processes, systems, which in turn are dependent upon expertise, experience, governance. And then essentially what we want to do is we want to identify the distributional aspects or states of these things in here. And they're dependent upon a lot of indicators which we can directly measure. And so we can do a number of things with this type of approach. Essentially, what we can do is, first of all, measure risk. At the very, very bottom level, we know what the states of our indicators are in. So we know, say, the number of years of experience our people have. We know, you know, whether they're attending education, whether they're attending CPD events. We know whether we've got key person concentration risk. And we basically say those things filter up and define what our experience, expertise, and essentially our quality indicators are. And then we combine that, all that together, to give us a distribution on what our errors are. So there's a calibration exercise through here to say what are those relationships. And that calibration exercise is naturally built upon a level of uncertainty, particularly where there's little information or lack of information. It can build upon expert judgment. It can be built up over time based upon actual experience. And so what you then get is a measurement of op risk that can either be qualitative or it could be calibrated in some way if you've got some loss statistics. And then you can basically relate directly risk at a higher level to direct business indicators. What you can then do is flip that around and solve one of the major problems that we have in the industry at the moment, which is how do you go from a risk appetite statement, a broad statement, I am low risk, to what does this mean for my business indicators at the lowest level? It's very, very complex because you have to resolve all those interrelationships and say people don't do it. People stick their finger in the air and say, my best guess is this. Whereas what we want to do is once we've mapped out those relationships directly, we can essentially resolve all of that inbuilt complexity through a Bayesian network. And we can take op risk that we define at a top level or at a more granular level and filter that all the way down to indicators and say, these are our risk indicators at the bottom that are implied by our risk appetite levels at the top. And then we can do a combination of both of those things, and we can say, well, we're operating in a world that's constrained. We have an op risk risk appetite that might be very low, but we know we're operating in a constrained world where I've got very low experience under stress. I have low maturity in my governance and compliance framework, and I have very high concentration risk. So what does that imply? What does all that information at different levels imply about the states of my other business drivers? Well, it basically says my quality of my systems need to be really high. I need to have very, very high quality of processes. And if I know that my quality of people is actually generally very low, it implies that my quality of governance needs to be exceptionally high. So we can start to resolve those complex scenarios around management giving me constraints. I've got constraints coming from my business units, and what does that imply about various other business drivers? In the last few minutes, I'm just going to quickly talk through emerging risk applications. I'll probably only have about 5 minutes or so, 3 minutes I'm getting. Okay, I'll go fairly quickly. So phylogenetics and cladistics is a great technique for thinking about risk classification. Typically, risks are put into a tree structure, a many-to-one relationship, a hierarchical relationship. That is very bad because it loses the information that is related to those risks at the most granular level. You want to basically not presuppose a hierarchy of risk classifications. What we want to do is understand the characteristics of our risk events that are in our risk registers and actually try work out what a natural hierarchy is. So what we want to essentially do is go through our risk events and we want to map them to or give them certain characteristics. These types of techniques have been used in biological sciences to derive the tree of life, essentially. So we can use them to the same effect on a risk categorisation. We can ask the question, what's the most parsimonious way of organising that data into a hierarchy? And it turns out that there's an objectively definable way of doing that. This is the most parsimonious solution to that problem because it involves the fewest number of jumps in characteristics as we branch out on that tree. So this is great because then we can basically apply that to our risk registers, extend the level of classifications to address what the key characteristics are of each risk. and then we can analyse it. And the beautiful thing about this is it then tells you how related certain risk events are to one another, which gives you key insight into how they're behaving. So you can drill into a business unit, you can look at the company as a whole, and essentially you can start to ask really, really poignant questions about emerging risks. So what you're seeing here at the bottom level, say here and here, are risk scenarios, or sorry, a risk characteristic that essentially has remained very static over time. It's unrelated to many other things. So that level of that type of risk is highly unlikely to change in the future. What we want to try and do is identify parts of the hierarchy or risk structure, that are subject to essentially emergent type of behaviour. So where you're getting evolutionary type of behaviour, where things are joining or characteristics are bifurcating, and you're getting a lot of complexity come through. And essentially, the shape of these tree structures are basically a clue to what types of risks and what types of characteristics those risks pertain or have are more likely to be subject to change in the future, because that's what you're trying to do in emerging risk. You're trying to guess where the next type of emerging risk is going to come from. And so what you can essentially say now is these types of risk characteristics are highly likely to bifurcate in the future, to change or to morph. And that's what I want to know. I want to know what those are. And I also want to know whether some of those risk characteristics kind of evolve in tandem to one another, so that if one of them changes, I know that's highly likely for another risk characteristic to change as well. So we can ask some really insightful questions in this process about how to identify emerging risks, how to build a risk hierarchy that actually makes sense, that's reflective of the risk that we take, as opposed to presupposing the answer before we even start. I have one more slide, but I'll wrap it up there because I know we're out of time. We might come back to it in any case.
Thanks, Josh. Do we have any first up questions? No. I've got a few, so I'll start. Kick off with one. If I was looking at, say, a participant, or in fact, I'll start with a different question. That was very complex. Just looking at your example there with the product. You know, the variable annuity. How do then, obviously it's scalable, but when you come to a company that's well diversified, how manageable is it to really get it across the whole company?
That's a really good question. So we typically start at a higher level. As I said before, think holism before reductionism. So you start at a higher level. It can get very complex. We've done these maps where we've literally had 800 concepts in them. But the beautiful thing about them is you then stand back and you look at it and you say, well, that just looks like spaghetti. How do I even try and make sense of that? The beautiful thing these days is that there's very, very cheap, freely available tools. Publicly available tools that can be used to analyse these in detail, very, very objectively, to pull out what those key nodes are, to pull out what the key drivers are, to analyse how the structure, how the structural risk story kind of fits together. If you've got a lot of drivers kind of converging into one, you really want to know that critical point, that critical concept. So that's how we go about identifying what those issues are and addressing kind of those key, you know, key drives and the key risks that surround them for a relatively large, complex, you know, organisation. So it can be done. The beautiful thing about this is it's all about trying to... you've always got the problem of where do you draw the line as to what's material or not. And so you can continue on going on with this. You know, you can continue drilling on into these drivers, but the analytics naturally draw you back to what is important and what's material.
So you could almost have a situation where you scale it by the different management levels within the company, and so some things will be important at one level of the company, but as you aggregate up, you're looking at bigger issues as you go up.
That's right. And that process of doing it at multiple levels of the company and across different different groups or business units is absolutely fundamental, because if you get a different story from two different parts of the business, that is telling you there's a disconnect in your business, and that in itself is a risk to the business. You know, if two heads of business units see what's driving their business differently, well, that has to be resolved, because the business can only operate in one way, essentially. So it's also a mechanism for enabling you to get a group-wide consistent view of what the company is.
Sorry, Anthony, can I ask you to use the mic?
Yeah, so it fundamentally depends upon getting that initial model, you know, identifying the key drivers and relationships. And if you get too many, it will simplify down, but if you miss some of the important ones, then it's not going to be good enough going forward.
Yeah, well, the whole point is to get a collective group kind of feeding into this, so you would hope that you don't miss any of those key drivers, but absolutely there's always the risk that you're not going to capture something. But if you can't do it collectively, you wouldn't probably be able to achieve it any other way.
Josh, Rob Daly, thanks for a great presentation. It's very complex and took a lot of time to really understand what you're trying to say. And I guess my question is, what's the sort of one or two things we should take from it? And my quick own attempt at answering is I feel it's almost a process answer. You've got to go from taking a simplified model which captures only part of the system, but then evolve back and realize what you're not capturing and building on the model, and it's kind of a to and fro process from the big to the small. But I'd like you to try to give us a sense of what should we take from it.
I think if I had to give one answer to that, it's really trying to think more holistically around what the drivers are and the interactions, as opposed to doing what we tend to be very good at, which is the reductionist approach. You know, we know market risk, we know longevity risk, we know demographic and policyholder behaviour risk very, very well, and we tend to get stuck in that land a little bit too much. What we want to try and do is think a little bit more holistically around... At the end of the day, most companies don't necessarily fail because they got those wrongs, most, not all. But a lot of companies fail because they miss, you know, the white elephant in the room that's just not on people's radars, because they're not thinking holistically enough, and not considering the impact that interactions between different drivers of the business can actually have.
I think from our discussions also, Josh, one of the things that struck me was how you said that this is typically done through engaging with the different areas of the business. So you're actually getting everyone's perspective and the people who know the processes and understand the processes. So getting back to your point, Anthony, I think that's where you get that holistic perspective.
Thanks, Josh. This is the second of your talks that I've come along to, and they've both been very informative. I'm going to ask the question that I asked at your earlier presentation, which relates to how much of this kind of work is actually being carried out in practice across the various financial service entities that you're in touch with or aware of in Australia. But before I do, just to Wayne's point about, I think you actually used the expression in the first place, the elephant in the room. And that's the thing that often, I mean, an elephant is a pretty big thing. And I could imagine going to a great deal of effort to do a whole lot of systems mapping, and then coming along to the management of a company, giving them the findings and having them saying, you're not telling us anything we didn't already know. But maybe what you've done is systematised what they already knew. I don't know if that's what you say is the benefit. I know that Alistair Mant, the author of a really fabulous book called Intelligent Leadership, used the picture of, is this a frog or is it a bicycle? and the frog is the complex system that I don't know if you know where to find a map to it, whereas a bicycle is reductionist. You can take it apart and see how each piece works. So how much of this is actually being done?
Yeah, that's a really good question. We have been using these tools and techniques extensively in the UK for the last 5 to 6 years, predominantly in the insurance space, and that includes a number of Tier 1 companies. And that's primarily focused on a lot of this concept mapping approaches. Locally, we've applied it within the asset management space, the financial planning space, and also actually for one of the very large banks in the Australian market. So it's getting significant traction and acceptance throughout throughout a number of communities, both domestically and abroad. We're also using it outside of the insurance space or the financial services space in the resources sector because it's getting traction. We've gone into meetings where strategic senior risk committee meetings where we've facilitated workshops where some of the feedback we've received is this is the first time we've actually ever had a risk discussion actually about the business itself and about the business drivers directly. Because the real value of this type of work is that it directly maps and relates back down to what's driving the business, as opposed to having some esoteric discussion around here's how I've calibrated a loss or severity curve, which is kind of just insensitive almost to what's actually going on in the business. And those Bayesian network techniques we've applied in anger as well within the context of some of the Tier 1 insurance entities calibrating them back to solvency capital in the UK. So you can basically map your solvency capital events back directly down to the states of your business drivers.
So it may not tell people things that they don't already know, but it may enable them to quantify that something is much more impactful than they originally thought or much less than impactful.
Yep.
Other ways that people use to try and get a company perspective is the use of correlations to bring different risks together. How do you compare this against using that? Sorry, unless there's one more question, but I wasn't seeing any hands. Yep. How would you compare this against the use of correlations in ERM?
Yeah, correlation, that's a really good question. Correlations are a necessary evil. I think we don't necessarily appreciate what some of the dangers that are inherent within using correlations are. Essentially, this illustrates the issue. Here we've got different levels of correlation between the relationship, trying to characterise the relationship between two variables. All of these, we can generally understand what the correlation is. All of these types of relationships have correlations that are either plus or minus one. But what about these types of relationships? All of these relationships have an official correlation of zero. Yet if you give that to a five-year-old and you tell them, do you see a picture there? Is there structure? Is there a relationship? They'll say yes. And the reason is because correlation is a poorly... it's a blunt tool, essentially. There is information in these relationships, and these are non-linear relationships, and these are what we want to understand a lot better. And so along with this science of complexity, and again, these have been used extensively outside of the financial services industry for many years now, there's a whole range of different metrics to capture levels of uncertainty, to characterise relationships much more effectively. This is just one of them. This is a mutual information score, which is basically capturing the degree of entropy that exists within that relationship. I won't go into the details now, but... essentially, what you want to do is you want some measure of the level of information that the relationship exhibits, essentially. So when you're doing your correlation analysis, you're only capturing a single dimension of that, and there's other dimensions which we really want to know about. So it comes back to what's the impact? Well, the impact is if you're starting to use correlations to do aggregations of risk, you're basically missing out on a complete dimension of how things could potentially be influencing each other. And what you want to do is understand what those core relationships are in a much more holistic, complete way because if you're going to build a risk framework around them, then, you know, by definition, you need to really be capturing that full amount of information.
Really tiny point. You could actually do something, Josh, which is rather than a straight line, because correlation is only about linear relationship. You have a nice exponential line, which is a really bad relationship, and it'll have a very low correlation on it as well.
Yep.
Or if you don't measure the right thing.
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, I think we're pretty much out of time now. I certainly found it a really interesting presentation. I've had a number of chats with Josh about this, and I just think it's fascinating, and I think it's a real opportunity for us to add value to the companies. One of the things I particularly like about it is that concept mapping really gives a position at which the actuaries can meet with the business on a common ground and common understanding, and I think, you know, that's critical for a lot of what we do. So thanks very much, Josh, for the time that you spent preparing and for giving us this presentation. I think it's been great. And can everybody please thank him?